Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 22nd day of April, Anno Domini 2023, and you, it's Earth Day. Ha-ha! You lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things you choose, nothing loose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news, but I have to say...
Yeah.
I hope you were all sitting down, and when you noticed it, the three of us are actually all here together.
Ta-da!
It's been rare the last few weeks, but that's okay.
Hey, life happens, and the three of us all, over the years, we just roll with it.
Yeah, exactly right.
That's about all you can do, folks.
That's right.
Life gets in the way sometimes, and you prefer it didn't, but hey.
Yeah, apparently, it's only 61 degrees in Las Lunas, New Mexico. It's 63 here, so...
I got 65.
I've got 69.
Well, what's it? Never mind. Nope.
I was going to say,
all
you
right,
don't.
All right. Nope,
what? Nope.
Absolutely not.
Time
nope.
Out.
Here comes the news. Okay.
I'll dump that.
right. On Tuesday, Google released a new update for Chrome desktop versions, Chrome browser desktop versions, with security updates for actively exploited... a Chrome zero-day vulnerability that allows attackers to execute an arbitrary code to take complete control of the system remotely. Google recently released an update for a Chrome zero-day this year. A week later, the second zero-day was discovered, fixed, and patched. And this is the third. Clearly, Google Chrome is the current hot target, which actually makes sense. It's the number one browser by a huge margin. And so, you know, that's the one they're going to go after. Just as clearly, Google is squashing the vulnerabilities as soon as they're discovered without waiting for the first Tuesday of the month. The patched version comes with 8 bug fixes, as mentioned by Google. Rewards have been given to the security researchers who found the bugs, ranging between $3,000 and $8,000. The new zero day is exploited in the Skia, a 2D graphics library that most web developers use for creating high-quality web experiences and graphics. To address the actively exploited security issue, update Chrome immediately. If it's not already bugging you to update, you can start the update manually. Open the Chrome settings menu in the upper right corner. That's the three dots. Select help, select about Google Chrome, and follow the bouncing prompts. It's strongly recommended that users apply the available update as soon as possible. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is... new Google Chrome browser zero-day bug. And your choices are, I'm up to date. I'll check today. Going commando, baby. Chrome what now? And I don't like any of your choices. So far, we have 31 votes. I'm up to date. Excellent is number one by a wide margin. And so far, nobody doesn't like any of our choices. That's going to change. So, listen, is your Chrome browser up to date? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Before we get to the phones, let us talk about why we're really here today.
The only reason we can still be here every week.
Yes, this is week three of our spring pledge drive. It's spring already. That's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
We keep toggling between summer and fall, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, my sinuses
with a few quick toe dips into winter.
Yeah.
But we are in our spring pledge drive. As I'm sure most of you know, we come to you only twice a year to talk about supporting this station. We've talked about this many times, but, you know, unlike many other stations, we don't get any government money. We don't get federal money, state money, local money, no money, except from you. You are what keeps this station on the air. When we say member supported, we ain't kidding. Look, you can give us a call and make your pledge. We have the great Michael Oden on the phones today. So you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or the easiest way to do this is to pledge securely online at jazz901.org. Click the Donate Now button. Scroll down until you see the soundbite stuff. And pick your level. Now, you can just pledge it any amount of money you want. No amount is too small, trust me. But there are various membership levels where you get benefits. I don't remember if they call them prizes anymore, but they're benefits.
Gifts.
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 Starting at the $90.10 level, get it? 90, 10.
That's a radio thing for you, top 40 people.
You get the Jazz 91 Enhanced Member Card. We'll talk more about that later. It's amazing. And then you can have either the tote bag, what's a pledge drive without a tote bag, the baseball cap or the coffee mug, or the portable USB charger, which is essentially a little battery-powered thing. You charge it up, stick it in your bag, and go on a trip, and you can charge your phone with it. It's very cool. There's the $120 nice shirt level where you get two enhanced member cards. And the white Soundbites short sleeve t-shirt, the $150 level, you get the two member cards. And then you can choose either the white Soundbites pullover hoodie or the Soundbites wireless desktop phone charger, which is different from the battery charger, which is also very cool, actually. At the $200 level, you get the two membership cards, plus the wireless phone charger, plus the portable USB charger. So you can charge everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
As you're out saving money with the member cards. And at the $365 per day level, you get the two membership cards, plus the t-shirt, plus the pullover hoodie. And, of course, there are levels above that and levels below that. And the first person to pledge $1,000 gets our undying gratitude. And... Rob will film a dance on TikTok for you. There you go. And as Fred says, the best benefit of all is you're on the air. Thank you, Fred. All right.
And a lot of companies will match your donation, too. Mm-hmm. We have a list on the jazz901.org website of matching companies. So check that list, see if your company is on it, and consider that as an extra bonus that your company
matches. Yeah, you're getting two for one.
And it's good for us, too.
Yep.
And we'll talk at some point later about Jazz-O-Matic, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, we're going to go to the phones and talk to Gary from Greece, New York. Hi, Gary. What's up?
Gary? You guys are on the air, and that's why I re-upped my membership. Windows has just pushed me two steps closer to a Chromebook. Thursday... all kinds of little changes occurred all at once. I updated my NVIDIA graphics card drivers, and everything went fine. I then tried to update Foxit Reader, and as always happens with me, I couldn't. It tells me I can't get an internet connection. So I did what I always do, which is to use Revo Uninstaller and take it out completely and do a brand new install. And then I did a restart, and everything seemed to be fine. And then I did another restart, and I get a screen that tells me that it doesn't recognize my username. And I have to sign in. Well, I've never had to sign in before.
Sign in to what?
Sign in to my computer.
Sign into Windows itself.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I followed their ever helpful advice and went to Windows Hello. What fresh hello is this?
Yeah, you got caught by a security improvement.
Yeah,
yeah.
Microsoft is really, and you missed a little tiny skip button down in the corner.
Oh, I guess so.
It's now incredibly tiny.
Yeah.
I'm stuck with it, and it gives me two options, depending upon whether I go to a go from a cold start or do a restart. A cold start comes up, knows that it's me, and automatically puts a line in for me to put in my PIN.
Right.
if I do a restart, it tells me that either the username or the password is wrong, and in the lower left-hand corner is my name twice. If I click on the other version of my name that's there, well, I shouldn't say version, my other name there that's highlighted, I get a PIN. The other way, I have to put in my username and my password.
Yeah, one of them is the local user account that you'd been using all along. And the other one is the Microsoft account that they tricked you into making.
Right. And Microsoft is getting more and more adamant about people using the Microsoft account. They don't like people using a local account.
It is helpful if you forget your password, then Microsoft has reset instructions.
Right.
Because if you forget the password of your local account, you're pretty screwed.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you have another account, an administrator account, that you can change it with.
Right.
I really don't know. I assume so. When I bought this computer from a local store, which no longer is in business, although they used to move at the speed of light, but they set it up so that all I had to do was sign in.
Right.
I guess I was signing in as the administrator.
Likely so, sadly.
I mean, I shouldn't say sign in, just turn it on, and there I was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
On a desktop computer that doesn't move, that's usually safe.
Yeah.
On a laptop computer, you take places, you really need to have a password. You're at a coffee shop, you get up to get a refill, someone sits down at your computer and does whatever they want in those 3 minutes because you don't have a password.
Right.
And I can understand that, but this is a desktop.
Yeah. Right.
So I think that I compounded the problem. I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll do a restore back to the date that I can find that's before the last Microsoft update on April 11th.
Right.
And I rolled back to that, but that didn't change the sign-in requirements. However, it did eliminate the latest installation of NVIDIA drivers. Okay, just go and install them again. But now it can't seem to make a connection to the internet in order to let me install them. It used to be that I would get a little pop-up window from Windows saying, do you want to allow changes, this program to make changes to your computer? Yes, and away I would go. Well, now I don't even get that little pop-up window.
Okay, so the first thing to check is whether or not you're actually an administrator. If you are not an administrator, you may not get that pop-up.
Because you're already administrator, so it doesn't need to elevate you.
Right. No, that's different. No. The pop-up he was getting was, do you want to let this computer make changes?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But if you're not an administrator, you can't let it make changes.
Right.
So it is possible that you're not signed in as administrator. Check to see that you are.
Could be standard user.
Right. That's
all right.
Which is the safest way to do it because most malware sneaks in because you're an administrator.
Right.
All right. So where do I look for that?
Under system.
Go into systems and users, and it will tell you whether your username is an administrator or a standard.
Okay. All right, I will check that. The other little glitch that occurred is that the number lock on my keyboard doesn't come on automatically all the time anymore. And this occurred all at the same time as these other wonderful little changes.
That you might want to check in the BIOS of the laptop or desktop. In the BIOS settings, there is a usually a little button that you can slide to automatically throw on the caps lock or the numbers lock.
I will look again. I already tried that. I have an Asus motherboard,
mm-hmm.
and wonderful graphics, not the your basic, you know, block letters in white on a blue background,
right.
But nothing that I could see under devices that would allow me to do what you suggested.
It may be a keyboard driver update.
Yeah.
Okay, I did troubleshoot that, and I also looked for drivers through the Windows utility, and it said, oh, no, your drivers are up to date.
You may want to check the keyboard manufacturer's website and see if they have something newer.
Okay.
One other question for you, though, Gary. Do you happen to have another computer, older computer, laying around?
I do have a laptop, yes.
Then what I would suggest, since you got this laptop, it's probably not the speed demon and everything else you want, you know, are currently using. But what I would suggest is look into a different version, one of the versions of Linux. Linux, you can make it look just like Windows, and you won't have the hassles that you're currently getting.
Well, and it's okay. Similar to a Chromebook, but I hate to say more featured, but you can run
far more programs
than available just for Chrome.
Yeah, I mean, and Linux has gotten so user-friendly. Like, Nick and I both use XSFC, and that looks so Windows-like. It's got the toolbar down along the bottom, and you can click on it, and you can see all the menu things. Installing programs is a piece of cake. You can watch a few YouTube videos and learn so much in an afternoon to get you up and running in Linux, it'd knock your socks off. And it runs on a low-end machine.
I may have to do that. I mean, I'm running Windows 10, and it's not my hardware does not, Windows doesn't view it as sufficient to run Windows 11.
Be thankful.
Well, yeah. The other thing I might suggest you try first is turn off fast boot. It's recently, how do I put this politely?
Mm-hmm. Got some issues.
Well, a lot of the new changes Microsoft is making conflict with fast boot.
Because they think you have the latest and greatest hardware because
right.
That's what they demand for their operating systems.
So I have noticed on machines that have this NumLock problem in particular, if you turn off fast boot, NumLock comes back. I don't know why. They shouldn't have anything to do with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is that in the BIOS?
No. That's in the control panel, hardware, power options.
Okay.
Do a search for fast boot.
Okay.
Go into the control panel and search for fast boot.
All right. I will give that a shot. That sure beats hitting this thing with a hammer.
Maybe not. Fast startup. Excuse me. Was I saying fast boot? Fast startup. You want to search the control panel for fast startup.
Okay.
And
it did. I have noticed that I have a spinning hard drive, and it lately now seems to boot up much faster.
Yep. Well, that's fast boot. And Microsoft has turned it on by default because screw you, it's their computer.
Even though you paid for it.
But if you're having those sorts of issues, it may be, and I'm not going to guarantee it, but it may be the turning off fast startup will fix that.
Okay.
And really what fast startup actually does is two things. It gives you your desktop before everything is loaded. So it looks like it started faster.
And then when you try to click something, nothing happens.
Nothing happens for a while.
Because it hasn't started yet.
Right. And I believe that it also prevents some of the background stuff like Microsoft Teams and Skype from loading before the desktop comes up.
All right. Let me give those a try and keep my fingers crossed and hope that this works. I do appreciate all your efforts for all these years.
Thank you. Thank you for being a member. We appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, fast startup is a trick. Look, they all do it. Macs do it. They bring up the desktop as soon as possible, even though not everything is loaded in the background. Linux does it. Chrome does it. Everybody does it. But it seems to not work well in certain Microsoft Windows configurations. How's that for semi-polite? So if you've got, if you're having those tiny little niggly issues, try that. Try turning off fast boot. Yes, your machine will boot slower, but it may solve all your
not
other
that
problems.
Much slower. But
right, not
little,
that much slower.
But
slower.
If only you could just not reboot like Linux.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Really.
Right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Doug from Holly, New York. Hiya, Doug. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Who came in?
I don't know.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yep. Go ahead.
No, you called somebody gentleman. We were looking around to see who you were referring to.
All right. I'm currently a Mac Apple user.
Thanks for calling.
come on, I know Steve's there. I know I was on the trying to set up some controls. I have a really large household with a lot of devices, and I'm trying to set up some controls, some limits on those devices. I was under the assumption that I could do that with Airport Utility, and I gave that a try, and I really didn't have any luck. And while I was trying at it, it appears that I'm only going to be able to do time limits on the devices. And I was looking for something maybe that would give me more control.
The Airport Utility is only used to manage airport routers, which basically are just routers. They don't have any extra features. Inside each Mac, there is the, it used to be called parental controls, now it's called screen time, where you can set up limits on apps that are run, when they have to get off, who they can email to. So it's basically designed to set up for kids limiting the use of the computer. And that's done on a computer-by-computer basis. You can also get a fancier router that has those type of controls built into the router so that you don't have to do it on each computer. And there is a way under screen time, when you set up a child account on a device, you as the family master can control that device remotely and set limits remotely. I always remember my son, Dad, I need 5 more minutes at bedtime. All right, okay. Once you get 5 more minutes once.
Yeah.
And that's done through the Airport Utility?
No, that's done in the screen time system preference on each computer one at a time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Airport Utility only manages airport routers, adding Wi-Fi names and passwords.
Okay. Yeah, when I tried to use it, I thought I was going to be able to do it on individual MAC addresses. And when I set up one for a trial, it just shut the whole network off. So I didn't know.
Yeah, you were in the wrong. You were simply in the wrong settings area.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. How about a third-party hardware? I looked at Bark Home device.
Don't know that one.
No, it looked like it was something you would plug into your router, and then you would be able to see the individual devices that got. We've got three grandchildren here and three adults, and everybody's got at least one, sometimes two devices. So
yeah, that's generally why you want to do it in the router that everyone connects to.
Right. Listen, we got to stay on the line. Okay. Don't hang up. Stay on the line. We got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of moments with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, with Doug from Holly, New York, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just a few.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick Francesco.
Dave Enright.
And Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We still have Doug from Holly on the line, do we? Are you there, Doug?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Okay. This Bark Home device really doesn't do anything that the stuff Steve's been talking about does. It basically lets you set up time limits for kids and all of that. Now, you do have to set up the kids as kids on the devices. Their sign-ins have to be designated as sign-ups of children. And then you can control them.
Okay. They sell a couple different products. They have Bark Home, which is a hardware, and then they have Bark Phone, Bark Premium. Some of those you would have to go into the individual devices and set up.
Right, and that's already built in, so you don't need to do that. The advantage of putting it in your router is that you can set it once in the router and not have to go around to all the other kids. Now I'm looking at the Bark Home device, and I only see one Ethernet port on it. So how can it route? How can it manage your traffic with only one port?
I don't know.
It should have one in and one out to come from your router. So that's the advantage of replacing your router with a router that has the parental control options already built into it.
Okay.
And the Netgear Nighthawk line, Asus has a few, TP-Link has a few. I posted an article from LifeWire on reviews of several of them. I use Eero myself, and they have parental controls in, but that feature is a pay feature.
Right.
When it's built into your router, you don't have to pay a monthly fee for it.
Okay. And what Eero is a hardware, isn't it?
Yeah, Eero is a router.
Okay. But you have to do a subscription to set up controls.
Yes.
Okay. And some of them you don't.
You do not. Right. Correct.
Okay. Yeah, I'm really not looking forward to changing the hardware, though, but... I'm going to spend some time on this, the screen time preference you were talking about. Mm-hmm. Is that something where I have to go in and manage each device again, the software solution?
Yeah, you have to set it up once on each device, but then you can tell it that you are the management yourself, mm-hmm. so you can manage the other devices later on. But you have to set it up once on each device individually.
Once it's done, you can manage it from your computer.
Okay.
One of the other options is that you can use with your existing router is to use OpenDNS and their parental controls. That's a free service that limits adult websites. It doesn't do anything about time limits on the device, but it does try to limit what... adult websites are available to connect you to. So if someone tries to type in an adult web address, DNS won't let them resolve that address.
Right. I think I need a little bit more say in that than just that.
One of the things that we did when my kids were little, and it's hard these days, is we put the computer in the living room.
Right.
So they can't do anything without being in front of mom and dad.
That's what I used to advocate over 25 years ago.
But it's harder now. They've got
tablets that go in their own room.
Right.
Or school issued laptops.
Right.
Heck, they can do it on their phones.
Yeah,
that's the problem. They have iPads, they have iPods, they have PlayStations, they have all. I couldn't even begin to make a list. There's so many, and there's more than just one computer.
So once you set up the screen time stuff on every machine, mm-hmm. once you set them up correctly, you can manage it all from your machine. That goes back to what Steve was saying. Dad, I need 5 more minutes. Steve didn't have to get up and walk over to his son's bedroom. He could just go in on his machine and say, "Okay, give him 5 more minutes."
Okay. Yeah, I'll look into that a little bit more.
Okie doke.
Thank you for your help, guys.
Thanks, Doug. Bye-bye. Bye. All right. Oh, there's a, okay. Don't forget, we are in a pledge drive, and this is your chance to be a hero. Make the call, make the pledge, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll free, 800-790-0415, or, of course, you can pledge securely online at jazz901.org. Just make sure when you donate at a level from which gifts are included, you get to choose what gifts you want. Go down to the soundbites stuff. And while you do that, and we thank those of you who did, and we know that those of you who have not done so yet are not freeloaders, you're just slow. So speed up, and we will talk to Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I know you've talked about this before, but I just wanted to hear you reiterate it again. I have a very close friend who this week received a text saying that Apple had locked their account, and this person called the number. And the end result is, after being jockeyed around and sounding very legitimate, this person wound up losing an extremely significant amount of money.
Yeah.
And my wife and I were just heartbroken over that, but there's nothing that can be done. This person was under a bit of stress and duress at the time they did that. They were not thinking.
And they make the messages scary enough that you don't think, and you just react.
And at the end, when this person capitulated and did what this phone number and people were asking, when I would say they lost a significant amount of money, I mean a significant amount of money.
Yeah.
I just hope that people hear this and you guys can spend a few moments with it again. And thank you for being there for all of us. I'll listen online.
Yep. Thank you. All right. So there are a couple of things here. First, there is absolutely no legitimate company on the planet that's going to call you.
No.
They're just not going to do it.
Not even the IRS or...
Nobody.
If anything, they'll send you a letter.
Right. They might send you a letter, but they're not going to call you. Certainly, Apple isn't... Apple doesn't have teams of people sitting around saying, oh, man, Steve Ray hasn't done this. We better call him right now.
Yeah.
They simply... look, none of them care. They don't care. And secondly, nobody, none of them will ask you for money over the phone. And for Pete's sake, absolutely no legitimate company on the entire planet will ask you for gift cards.
Yeah.
Not a one, not anywhere.
Anything that asks you for a gift card, immediately hang up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting about all this, nice segue, is that on May 11th of this year, May 11th at 6:30 p.m. here at Jazz 90.1. The Jazz 90.1 University is going to have a class on best practices to help you stay cyber safe. And I think it's going to be excellent.
I wonder who's teaching that.
I'm about halfway through writing it, so I think it's going to be excellent. I would encourage those of you who are really interested in cybersecurity to attend this. It's $15 for non-members, $10 for members. Might I suggest that if you have family members who are prone to make these kinds of ill decisions, that you bring them along?
Mm-hmm.
They are the people who really need to hear this.
Because that's what most of them prey on, though, is anybody elderly. That sounds older. Oh, they'll lock their hooks into them versus a younger person. Oh, okay. Elderly, if they can sink that hook and bait them big time, you know, and strike the fear of God in them, the way they go.
Yep. So those of you who are, who know, if you're the tech support for elderly people.
Yeah.
Or anybody who's a little less than super savvy about this stuff, might want to think about that. Again, it's May 11th at 6:30 p.m. here at Jazz 90.1 University. Here at Jazz 90.1. It's called Best Practices to Help You Stay Cyber Safe. You can see a link at the website.
I just put one on our link list, too.
Oh, good. Excellent. And I think you'll find it's some interesting and useful information. I'll also try to include either a handout or something with information on it.
Well, that's what we said, though. You know, we've been saying over the decades, you know, before it was viruses and, you know, that type of stuff that, you know, they're trying to destroy your machine that way. Well, they didn't make much money off of it. So they've turned to scams now where they sit there and try to sound very intimidating, as Larry's friend will attest to now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
they do.
That person is not a lone person. They thrive on that. You know, if they can keep calling, these are call centers that will sit there and just keep regurgitating out phone numbers that they'll try and see if they can bait them. Even if they only get, you know, $50, $100. Hey, that's $50, $100 more than they had before. But versus if they can score a big fish, and or they call a big fish, you don't get thousands of dollars.
The crazy thing is that from what we've seen, our customers are telling us they're most of the time they're asking for like $600, $700.
Right.
And most people stop and think, because that's quite a bit of money. If they ask for $100, they probably get a lot more people.
Yeah. Exactly.
But it sounds like what happened to Larry's friend, we've had people this happen to also. People are getting warned about gift cards. Don't use gift cards for payments or things like that. So now the cyber guys want you to log in to cyber criminals. Won't want you to log in your bank account.
Right.
And the first thing they do when you call them and there's a problem, they want remote access to your computer. Then they tell you to log into your bank account. They just watch you type your password. We've seen them take money out of your savings account and deposit it into your checking account. So here's $5,000 we gave you. Go to the bank, draw that out, and send it to us.
Why? Who knows?
Right, who knows? Yeah. And people do. We had a guy come into the office the other
because
day.
Because they're not computer
literate.
Had
all this cash in his pocket because, you know, they told him to withdraw this cash. And so, well, look at your bank. Not realizing it came out of savings to go into check because you logged into your bank account with them remotely connected and they watched you type your password and now they have your bank account information. They can drain all of the money out of your bank account.
The safest thing we can say for folks is, you know, anytime they want to get into any of your banking, any of your personal information or ask you to get gift cards, hang up.
Well, and it used to be they'd ask for credit cards, but then people can dispute the charge. Although then we've seen the bad guys produce a contract signed in a script font by the customer saying he agreed to pay the $600.
Right.
And then the credit card won't dispute it. So then they went to gift cards, and now they're going to electronic funds transmission. So you might be used to paying your water bill by EFT. Well, you can pay these guys by EFT. Then they have your bank credentials. They have your banking account number and can withdraw money from it.
And right. That's the same... we've talked about before, Nick, is how they'll sit there and try to get you to say yes, uh-huh, and then they use that against you. Well, he said, we asked him if it was all right to use this number to charge it, and they got it recorded.
Yep. We had a good one the other day. The customer had come in. He was picking up his computer that we just cleaned out of all the junk the bad guys left, and they called him while he was in our store, wanting their $400 that he agreed to pay. Jackie took the phone when he recognized the call ID, took the phone and answers it. Hi, this is Blair. You know, nice androgynous name. And I said, well, yeah, your husband agreed to pay. My husband's been dead for 3 years. How dare you bring that up on my job?
Good one, Jackie.
Go, Jackie.
I think somebody scammed you trying to say that they're going to pay you money. No, no, ma'am. Nobody scammed us, you know.
Right. We're the scammers. Nobody scams us. What do you leverage?
Yeah, when I scam people, I usually ask for 30%, not 20.
Right. Yeah. So again, if you're interested in this, it's May 11th at 6:30 p.m. Here at Jazz 90.1. Tickets are $10 for members, $15 for non-members. Just another benefit of membership at Jazz 90.1. So I hope to see you there. It's going to be a lot of fun and very informative. So we'll see you there. Thanks. And I should probably read this next. Well, this is actually a little different from the thing you were talking about. I'll read this and we'll get into what you want to. The Wall Street Journal published a report highlighting how thieves can use Apple's optional recovery key security option to permanently lock out iPhone users from their Apple ID account. As the journal has first revealed back in February, there have been increasing instances of spying on an iPhone user's passcode in public and then stealing the device in order to gain widespread access to the device and its contents. So they watch you type in your PIN code, and they steal your phone, and they know your PIN code. All the victims interviewed in the initial report said their iPhones were stolen while they were out socializing at bars and other public places at night. With knowledge of the passcode, a thief can easily reset the victim's Apple ID password in the Settings app, even if Face ID or Touch ID is enabled. Subsequently, the thief can then turn off Find My iPhone on the device, preventing the owner of the device from tracking its location or remotely erasing the device via iCloud. Thieves can also use the stolen device to set or reset a recovery key, which is a randomly generated 28-character code that is required to regain access to an Apple ID once it's been enabled. Apple's policy gives users virtually no way back into their accounts without that recovery key. With unmitigated access to a stolen iPhone, the device's passcode, and the Apple ID password, thieves can steal money via Apple Pay and potentially other banking apps, view sensitive information like photos and emails, and more Apple websites. Apple's website does warn that losing access to both your trusted devices and recovery keys means that you could be locked out of your account permanently. In this scenario, however, thieves spying on iPhone passcodes before stealing the devices means that victims only need to lose their device in order to potentially be permanently locked out. The report serves as a valuable reminder to protect your iPhone's passcode in public. Users should also switch from a 4-digit passcode to an alphanumeric passcode, which would be more difficult for thieves to spy on. This can be done in the settings. To protect a bank account, consider storing the password in a password manager that does not involve the device's passcode. So, for example, I use NPass, and it requires my fingerprint to open. Go ahead, steal my phone.
Mm-hmm. And your finger.
And my finger, right. Yeah. So how careful are you entering your phone's passcode? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free. 800-790-0415.
But the thing of it is, did you use your thumb or, index?
Which finger?
Right, yeah. Right. Which finger, which hand? Yeah.
The big thing that got me really annoyed about this story going around, and so many other blogs and newspapers and agencies picked up on it, is the clickbaity headline about hackers use this easy way to break into your iPhone. They watch you type the passcode.
Yeah. It is easy, you got to admit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so more and more devices are using biometrics now, fingerprint or face ID. But if that fails several times, it falls back to your passcode.
Right.
And the recovery is also part of it. If your password, you can't get back in with your word, you can still get back in. The thieves are going to figure out a way to use that too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we've said for years, in fact, probably haven't said in years now, when you're typing your PIN at the ATM, your hand, so that the guy, person standing behind you can't see it, or the person with binoculars across the parking lot.
Yeah, can't see whether you're positioning your hand over the one
and
three or
what
whatever.
I'll often do, especially in winter, is I'll put my whole palm print down on the keypad.
Right.
Because someone figured out they can use an infrared camera
right.
and see how much heat you left behind on the numbers and figure out your PIN code that way.
I used to embarrass my students because sometimes they would come up to me after class, my machine is locked, and they would say, I have a question about this or that or thing. And so I got to unlock the password. I put my hands in the, I look up, they're staring at my hands.
Yep.
And I go, would it be easier if I just told you my password? And then they walk away.
I always try to make a point of turning away when someone's typing their password.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah. Even if I'm helping them with something and I say, type in your password.
Yeah.
I look the other way. That's only polite.
Yeah, it's courtesy.
Sometimes I have to type it so many times, I just ask them for it, and then we'll change it to something else.
Yeah, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Sharon from Bristol, New York. How are things in Bristol, Sharon?
Well, the rain just passed through, so we're waiting for the next round.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I have a question about tablets.
Yeah.
I currently have a Amazon Fire probably about 4 years old, and it's getting kind of slow.
Yeah.
So the price was right, though.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm wondering if I go buy a new Amazon Fire, will it run a little better?
A little.
Been upgraded.
Depends on which one.
Yeah.
You can buy cheap fires or you can buy fast fires.
Right.
Okay.
And they don't make it easy to tell the difference.
Well, exactly. There are the big thing about the Amazon Fire is it's fairly limited in what you can load, and that's on purpose. So, for example, it's not easy to load non-Kindle readers.
Okay.
Which may not be a problem for you. It certainly is for me, but it may not for you. And as Steve said, they don't make it easy to discern the fast ones from the slow ones. And I've noticed that there are ads fairly consistently for Amazon products, and that annoys me. I paid for this. Why am I seeing your ads? But I paid less because
you should have paid less. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So there are other companies. Walmart sells the ONN line of tablets that are not terribly expensive, but also have they're pure Android. So not pure, but they're Android tablets, and so you can load whatever you want on them, including Kindle.
And a lot of the time, if you look at the specs on the tablet, it will tell you how much RAM it has or memory.
Uh-huh. Right.
Uh-huh. More RAM is better. 2 gigs is, 4 gigs is better.
Okay.
8 gigs is best. The problem is a lot of the ads conflate memory and storage. So it says it has 32 gigs of memory. No, it has 32 gigs of storage. It may only have 2 gigs of memory.
Right.
So memory is where it does its work.
Uh-huh.
And then storage is where it stores the things you're done with, like your books and stuff. So if it only has 2 gigs of memory, it can't do very many things at once, like run the operating system and the web browser.
Right, right, right.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, and I do notice it gets a lot of ads, which is annoying. And I saw you can pay extra and get an ad-free version, so I don't know how good that is.
Well, it just means fewer ads. It doesn't change the hardware.
Okay.
Right,
yeah,
so,
right.
I mean, that's really all that is.
Well, here I'm looking at the Fire HD 8 Plus, and it says it has a 30% faster processor.
Mm-hmm.
30% faster than what?
Exactly.
And 3 gigs of RAM.
Okay.
Okay, 3 is better than 2.
Yes.
Right, right. I don't know what mine has, but I know it's 4 years old, so I'm sure it's been upgraded somewhat anyway. Yeah. But
right.
Okay, all right, so you're saying chances are it will have been upgraded and to get a better model if I get that, or look at something else?
Either one. And okay. You should know that whichever way you go, if you log in with to either the Kindle app or the Amazon Fire with your current Amazon ID, you'll get all your books back.
You'll get what?
All your books back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So everything you've already purchased from Amazon will show up in your list to download again.
Right. They won't download, but they'll be available in the list.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Excellent timing. That music tells us that you have wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense, but don't go too far. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with more Dave Enright, more Steve Ray, more Nick Francesco, and a whole lot more of you. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, and we are member supported Jazz 90.1, which means we are in the middle of a pledge drive. What a perfect time to make the call and make the pledge. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415, or pledge securely online at jazz901.org. You do that, take a quick bio break, come on back, because there's a whole nother hour of sound bites coming your way. We'll see you on the other side.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
This is WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
on Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Very exciting. And we are in the middle of a pledge drive. We'd like this pledge drive to be over, quite honestly. But it's not going to be over until we reach our goal. And so you can help us get there. Make the call, make the pledge. If you want to talk to the great Michael Oden, and he's a wonderful human being, you should want to talk to him. Give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Alternately, if you prefer, you can pledge securely online at jazz901.org.
And keep listening.
In either case, it takes less than 2 minutes, unless you're an incredibly slow typer. And once you are done, you will be able to feel smug rather than annoyed that we're in a begging cycle. So join us in the family. Join us as a member of the team. And while you do that, I'll read the next news item. It's no secret that Microsoft really, really wants people to use Windows 11. What's the best way to achieve this goal? Judging from the latest dev build, more start menu ads. That, speaking of ads, that harass people who don't sign in with an official Microsoft account. Reports arrived in November of Microsoft testing ads or notifications in a Windows 11 preview build start menu. Microsoft products appear in the flyout screen above the change account settings. One of the ads prompts users to back their files up to OneDrive, while another suggests users sign up for a Microsoft account. News of the ads brought plenty of justified anger, but not enough to make Microsoft rethink its plans. They started sending the ads out to a few users in March's preview build and expanded the practice in last week's Windows 11 Insider preview build, number 23435. The four ads notifications are focused on encouraging those who log in with a local account. We talked about this earlier. To sign up for an official Microsoft account. They extol the benefits of being able to back up a device, use Microsoft 365, keep security and profile settings in one place, and receive a whopping 5 gig of free cloud storage. Ooh, for accessing files on the move. Not surprisingly, Microsoft continues to force these ads on people who has met with massive condemnation. But not everybody has been critical of the ads. One person noted they would rather put up with these notifications than see Windows turned into a subscription model. Well, don't hold your breath.
It's coming.
Others have pointed out that advertisements for OneDrive appeared in Windows 8 and 10, so this isn't really anything new on Microsoft's part. Not that that makes it okay. Not all features that appear in preview builds end up in the full release, but Microsoft is really pushing these ads hard and has been for months now, so it seems we'll probably be getting them soon, whether people like it or not. So would you rather see ads or pay a subscription? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415.
That's one thing I can say I'm happy about on that new computer I got a few months ago, that I got the notice from Microsoft that said, your computer does not qualify for Windows 11. I go, thank you! Thank you very much.
Yeah, I got that on one as well. And I thought, it doesn't qualify for Windows at all. I'm putting Linux on it.
Yeah, I was going to say, my other two computers, I sit there and put Linux on it, and it runs great. Thank you very much.
Right.
One of the annoyances that I've seen happening more and more often, especially in streaming TV services, is it used to be you pay the subscription, you get no ads.
Right.
Now you pay the subscription, you get fewer ads.
Right.
You can pay a higher prescription to get a subscription.
Here's what I hate. I like to go to the movies. and I like to get there earlier, early. But now I get there early, and I watch a half an hour of ads.
Yeah. I don't mind seeing the movie trailers.
I like the movie trailers.
I don't want to see an ad for something else.
It's a half an hour of ads.
You're watching all commercials that you see at home.
I like the ones that have the trivia.
Those are nice.
That's fun, yeah.
But I'm paying to see the movie. Why am I paying to see your ads? I don't want your ads. I don't want to pay to see your ads. I've stopped showing up early for movies.
Yeah, you can even say a movie starts at 3:15. You could show up at 3:30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And walk in.
I remember a couple of years ago, one of the theaters tried to change their time. So we're going to publish the time the movie starts, not the time the previews started, the commercials. Right. We're going to time the movie starts. And no one could get used to it, and we're showing up half an hour late.
Yep.
Because they're used to showing up half an hour late because they're expecting half an hour of previews.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, there's people, look, I get it. These guys need money. They're not, unless you're Linux, you're not putting out your products for free. So they need to make money, and they're not making enough money because, you know, their customers are, of course, the people who have their stock. And you are the product that they bring to those customers. And that means that you've got to pay and pay and pay and pay. And we've said this many times before. Microsoft has a real problem. They already own 90%+ of the market. They don't have a lot of places to grow.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to make money some other way. So ads and subscriptions are the way that they're going to go. And don't think if you pay for a subscription, you're not going to get ads, because trust me, you are.
And I mean, they've pretty well maxed out as far as, you know, the Microsoft Office products, as far as adding additional features. There's so many features they can add. And it's like, yeah, no, I don't need all that other stuff. Why should I keep paying for that? And, you know, now with Google offering for the typical user, home user, they can go on there and use Google Docs for free.
Yep.
And it's like, why should I keep paying Microsoft for all this other stuff that I'll never take advantage of?
You keep having that argument with customers. You can use these apps for free. And on the Apple, you get the Apple Office apps that come with it for free that are file compatible with Microsoft. Oh, but I don't know how to use those. Well, the new version of Word is going to look different than your 10-year-old version now.
Right.
You're going to have to learn something anyway. Learn something free. You know, just go ahead and buy it.
Okay.
Yeah, hey.
What else can you say but okay?
Yep. More money than brains.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Richard from Rochester, New York. What's up, Richard?
Hi. I have a Lenovo IdeaPad Lex 5i, which I bought in November last year. And it just shut down on me automatically. I was using it, and all of a sudden it just went blank. I couldn't get it to boot up. I looked online to see what might be happening, and somebody suggested trying to hit the power button and hold the refresh button down at the same time, and that works. And this happens periodically, but I'm wondering, while this thing is still under warranty, whether I'm looking at problems ahead with this.
Oh, if it's under warranty, you get it into them immediately.
Yeah, because it could also be the cord. I mean, if the cord isn't fully charging it.
Right.
No, it's fully charged. It goes to sleep is what it does. I realize.
And doesn't wake up again.
When it shuts down, it's still the light on the side is on. Maybe I don't remember if it's blinking or not. So it actually just sets itself to sleep.
It's possible that some device driver doesn't like going to sleep, and then so it won't wake up.
Windows had that issue.
Trying to track down which device that is tricky.
So you think I should send it back? That's
I would.
Yeah, okay. I bought it from Amazon.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, like Nick said, you know, why not take advantage of it right now while it's still under warranty? Then usually, if your luck is like mine, it's usually the day after the warranty expires, then the thing goes south on me.
Does this happen while you're using it or after you let it sit for a while?
No, this is while I'm using it. I'm sitting there using it.
Yeah, no.
Something's not right.
Yeah, it's not going to sleep then.
Yep. Yeah. Get it in, turned in.
Okay, we'll do.
Yes.
And now, can I Can that be done locally, or do I have to send it back through Amazon?
It depends. Call them and find out. You might have to send it back.
The nice thing about Amazon...
Well, if you want it repaired, you can go to a Lenovo dealer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's an authorized Lenovo dealer in town.
Yeah.
If you want it replaced, you'd have to take it back to where you bought it.
Well, the great thing about Amazon that I have found, because I ordered a couple things that it was the wrong item. So all they had me do was sit there, put it back in the package that it came to, and they sent me over to a UPS store.
I printed off
this ticket, and I walked in with it, with the bag, you know, back in its original package, and the lady goes, oh, yeah, I'll take care of it, and they ship me a new one.
Sometimes you don't even need to put it back in the box, because they have a giant box of Amazon returns waiting, and everything goes in one big box.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I know it. And somebody buys it on a pallet.
Yeah.
I understand how that works. Okay, well, don't buy this one on the pallet, though, if you come across it.
Okay, that's a deal. Thanks.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Richard. Yeah, it could be anything from a bad transistor.
Who knows?
Resistor, could be anything. Could be anything.
If that's brand new and it's already acting up like that, yeah, no, get rid of it.
As long as it's under warranty, let them deal with it. And that's, by the way, I keep telling people this, particularly if you're getting a laptop, any portable device, tablet, phone, get the extended warranty. You know you're going to drop it.
Mm-hmm.
At least once, you know there's going to be a problem with it. Get the extended warranty. Now, when I buy super cheap tablets off of Woot for, $8, I don't bother with the warranty. Okay. But, the tablet that I use every day,
that
is a decent tablet, I bought the extended warranty. And God knows I've dropped it enough times. It seems quite sturdy. I got a nice case for it, but still, it's nice to know that if something happens, I'm covered. And, the warranty is insurance, like any insurance. You may never use it. And yes, you've wasted that money. On the other hand, if you need it and you don't have it, you're going to waste a lot of other money.
They're hoping you don't need it and you're hoping you will need it. So it's kind of interesting. You're hoping your thing breaks because to justify buying the insurance. Right. One thing we really liked recently, Apple added accidental damage claim to their AppleCare protection plan. So if it covers physical damage, so you drop your laptop and break the glass, it's a $99 repair instead of $800 or $900 for an entire display assembly and glass and LCD panel and camera and everything.
Every time you mention that, it sort of puts a smile to my face because it reminds me of our great friend Bob Smith.
Oh, God bless his Bob.
And his tough book.
Yeah.
You want to talk about a computer, folks, that was durable? The IBM Toughbook. Bob Smith had, God rest his soul, had this Toughbook.
It was Panasonic, yeah.
He glued that thing, I think, in three different corners to hold it together. Yep. And that thing still kept ticking.
Yeah.
And Panasonic still makes the Toughbook brand.
Oh, it was by Panasonic?
Yeah, there's two three different
it was IBM.
Brands. And so we've seen those with linemen. What's the gender neutral term for linemen?
Sure.
Construction workers. People that are in a hazardous working environment where they need extra rugged
tough laptop. Notebooks.
Yeah, with an inch of rubber around them, so they're used to being dropped or driven over by a bulldozer.
Right.
Every time you say something like that, it reminds me of that guy. He was so proud of that thing. I remember when he first got it. Look at what I got. It accidentally hit the one corner. It's like, okay. But it still works good.
Yep.
Okay, Bob.
Still works, and that's what counts.
Yeah.
I've seen people. We had a faculty member who consistently left his laptop on the top of his car. Consistently did it, and we were replacing that thing quite regularly.
Ooh.
Well, he'd lose it in traffic somewhere, so we made sure
I can remember a client of mine got a brand new laptop, nice big screen in there, and she had it in this tote bag. That she set the tote bag down next to her car. She's packing stuff up and took off and drove over it.
Yep. Yeah. And if you've got the extended warranty, well, in that case, it might even still be under warranty if it's new enough. But if you've got the extended warranty, believe me, the peace of mind you get from having that extended warranty is worth every penny.
She brought it in. She was crying upset. She was, but I need this one paper off of it. So we were able to pull the hard drive quick out, do it. And luckily, she had purchased the extended warranty. She goes, and I'm so thankful for that. And she sent it back in and got a new one. But, she was pretty... rode over this brand new laptop that was only a day old with her car.
And this leads us to backups, people. Backups. If you only have one instance of your data on your laptop, you're playing Russian roulette.
Yep. It's not
every single day.
And it's not just the computer dying. It could get lost. It could get stolen. You could drive over it in your car.
The hard drive itself could go bad. The computer's fine.
What happens if it gets a power surge?
Right. So you need to back up your data. And again, we have a link on our website to backup. It's under some important links. It's the third one down. And it talks about backing up and how often you should back up and how many backups you should have and where they should be. And it sounds like a real pain in the patoot, and I get that. But it takes, once it's set up, it's automatic. You don't have to do a thing. If you use something like pCloud, you never have to think about it again.
And I know you should check now and then and make sure it's still working.
Yes, and I do. But you don't have to think about, did I back up?
Yeah. The big critical thing, though, which I always stress, and I know Steve has run into this many a times, as has I, is people come in and they've lost their photos.
Yep.
Documents, anything else, folks, I don't care. You could probably try to recreate that. But we've stressed this over the decades, literally decades, and backing up, and especially your photos. If nothing else, the photos are what can't be replaced. Those moments in time that you were with a loved one or, the kids or whatever, once they're gone, they're gone.
And if you are an Amazon Prime member, either because you like free shipping or because you like the TV channel, you have access to unlimited photo storage at Amazon. Why are you not taking advantage of that?
Yep.
Why? I have a Google Pixel, and so far, at least, we have unlimited photo storage because of that. But I also back them up to Amazon because having it in two places is twice as good as having it in one. So you can do that, and you get unlimited full-resolution photo storage and 5 gigs for video. Now, 5 gigs for video is not a lot. But most people don't take video. Most people take pictures.
Yeah, it's the photos. And once they're, like we were saying, though, once they're gone, on a hard drive that, you were thinking you were going to get around to backing up and didn't, is gone.
My my sister-in-law lost a laptop. It died. And she had on it the only copy, her only copy, of pictures of my daughter, with her mother, with her mother, with her mother.
Ooh.
Four generations.
Oh.
Picture gone. I had it on my computer, on a thumb drive, on Amazon Photos, and in Google Photos. So I just sent it to her again. But if I didn't have it, and I didn't have it backed up,
that history
would be gone.
Yep.
You don't recreate that photo.
Mm-mm.
You can recreate documents. You can recreate pictures you've drawn. You can create spreadsheets that you've created, but you cannot recreate
those moments and times. They're gone.
So if you're a Prime member and you're not using the unlimited storage, shame on you. Honestly, Shame on you.
It's free.
It takes about 3 minutes to, you've already paid for it.
Yeah, it's free.
It takes like 3 minutes to set up on your phone and about another 2 minutes to set up on your computer, and you're done.
And many, many other companies, including the big OS companies, have cloud storage options. You get a little bit for free, and you can buy more space if you need to. So, you know, like Nick said, you can have it on Amazon Photos, Google Photos, iCloud Photos, Dropbox Photos.
Yes.
You have your stuff in as many places as you can so that always one of them will be available.
Right. And I say to people, you know, I've got my local, it's on my computer. It's on a local backup on a Raspberry Pi. It's on my website. It's on Google. It's on Amazon. If something happens that all of those go out simultaneously, we got more problems than me just getting my pictures back.
Oh, heck yeah.
But up until that point, I will always have access to my photos. And so when my sister-in-law loses hers, I can get them back for her.
Yeah, we had a customer bring a hard drive in to us a while ago and say it was her backup drive and she needed to get all her photos off of it. Well, if that's your backup drive, you just go to your main drive. Oh, that died too. At exactly the same time?
If the backup
drives, get a new backup as soon as you can because they're not likely to fail at the same time, but they can.
And again, one backup is not enough backups. Enough.
Yep.
You don't have enough backups. I don't care how many you have. You don't have enough. But check out that backup page and definitely follow the 3-2-1 plan. Three backups
minimum
in two separate places, at least one of which is off site.
And that can be take a hard drive and carry it to work.
Right.
Yeah. That's one thing I regret, though, being as old as I am.
We all regret that you're as old as you are.
I know it. No, that my mother never took, you know, was into the technology and everything else because back in the day, you know, the 50s and the 60s, they used to take a lot of pictures and they're gone. My mother never took good care of them, the negatives or anything else. And, you know, they'd have them in the shoe boxes and everything else. And we kept telling, you know, you should do something with them and never got around with it. So pictures of my brothers and my sisters and aunts and uncles. I mean, my dad was one of 19. And we used to have gatherings on Thanksgiving. And we used to have some great pictures. They're gone.
They're gone.
Because
nobody backed them up. Nobody thought to.
Nobody took the time to, with the modern technology. And they might have had a copy of a picture. And, you know, just to scan it and everything else. I've got a few that, you know, of my sisters and my brother and some aunts and uncles. But for the majority, I'd say over 90% of them are lost because folks didn't take care of it. And those are, again, moments you can't get back. They're gone forever.
Right. My wife's grandfather did that, had pictures of millions and millions of pictures. Luckily, one of the cousins ran a television station. So he took all those photos, handed it to a minion and said, digitize them.
Wow.
So, you know, and then gave all the family CDs.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a bunch of those. But again, I may be the only one who's backed them up.
Well, you're fortunate there.
Because, well, but that's side of the family. My side of the family? Nope.
What I was trying to roundabout way get to is, you know, don't be like me, you know, in my family and that, you know, the technology is there.
Yep.
Take the time and effort. There are so many places that you even Google, you can get free storage there. And like Nick was saying, Amazon Prime, if you're a Prime member, back it up to there. It's all out there that you could take the time and do it because, again, those things can't be brought back.
And my cousin Jim has sent me a number of pictures, which is great, from his grandfather. I forget who they're from at the moment, but yeah, so that's great. And but you know, if you're not backing them up, don't be surprised when they're lost. I mean, that's just common sense. Back up now.
No one told me my computer was going to break.
Right, exactly.
Or someone told me my computer won't break.
Right. You know, thumb drives are cheap. Online storage is cheap. Get it, use it. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And this is my favorite story of the week. Amazon has introduced a new feature to Prime Video called Dialogue Boost. It's intended to isolate dialogue and make it louder relative to other sounds in streaming videos on the service.
Why isn't it already?
Exactly. Or why is it that sound mixers are making the background noise so loud these days? Mm-hmm. According to an Amazon blog post, Dialogue Boost analyzes the original audio in a movie or series and intelligently identifies points where dialogue may be hard to hear above background music and effects. Then speech patterns are isolated, audio is enhanced to make the dialogue clearer. This AI-based approach delivers a targeted enhancement to portions of spoken dialogue instead of a general amplification at the center channel in a home theater system. Not all content will be eligible for the Dialogue Boost feature, though, at least not yet. Amazon says it is initially launched on select Amazon originals worldwide, like The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and The Big Sick. Those don't generally have a lot of explosions and gunfights in them. While this is partly an accessibility feature for people who are hard of hearing, Amazon is also responding to a widespread complaint among viewers. A 2022 survey found that 50% of American viewers watch content with subtitles most of the time, many of them citing muddled audio and saying that it's more difficult to understand dialogue in movies and TV shows than it used to be. There's no one simple reason for this development. It involves several factors, but many of them can be reasonably be categorized under a fragmented viewer experience banner. Although that's nonsense because, again, if you look at old movies and TVs, they play great on everything. Decades ago, most TVs or home movie theaters had similar audio capabilities. However, the range of devices used, from built-in speakers and cheap TVs and laptops to high-end Dolby Atmos surround sound systems with AI-optimized sound fields and everything in between, has grown. Additionally, TV manufacturers introduce a wide variety of proprietary technologies and configurations that they try to use to differentiate their products and marketing materials, changing the way the same content sounds on nearly every device. All of that means the professionals who master and encode audio for distribution on streaming networks have their work cut out for them. Some shows prioritize making sure it sounds good for high-end setups, but the comparative lack of dynamic range and cheaper speakers can leave owners with lesser systems with muddled audio. But even if a futile effort is made to encode the audio for the widest viewership possible, the devices are still so fragmented that it may be impossible to ensure a quality experience for everyone. Or, more likely, they're just some newfangled audio school that doesn't pay attention to the stinking dialogue. Amazon hasn't announced when the feature will expand to more content, but we wouldn't be surprised to see rapid expansion, not just from Amazon, but from other streamers offering similar features too. Do you watch TV with the subtitles turned on? Give us a shout at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
There is a gentleman that you might have heard of. His name is Bob Heil. He puts out a product. Matter of fact, he has designed sound systems and everything else for a lot of big rock bands
since
and everything.
1966.
Yeah. And he is a ham radio operator. And he came up with this device. It's called a parametric audio device. And you could hook it up to your TV because he, in doing the sound, studied sound and he learned from these guys from GE and all those scientists and everything else and asking questions to that. And he came up with this device. It's called a parametric audio device. And you can hook it up to your TV or that, and you can adjust the levels because human voice, as we get older and that our hearing's not that great, and he's designed this box with the speaker that you can adjust And you can hear things like you did when you were 20 years old.
Looks a lot like that box right there.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. But they're used in a lot of equipment now, and it was through his studying of sound that he got to realize that, folks, as we got older and, you know, getting the hearing aids and everything else, and the way audio was coming through TV, they were, like, dumbing it down. So a lot of it, you know, you sit there, and you,
yep.
you
well, just, but again, that's the audio mixers. Because, yep. again, if you watch yep. an old show, the oh, audio definitely. Is crystal clear.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's...
It's not got anything to do with the devices, although that's what this article says. But it doesn't have anything to do with the devices. It has everything to do with who's doing the mixing these days.
I see a lot of, or hear a lot of difference depending on the streaming service I'm using.
Yes.
I'm constantly needing to change my surround sound system. Sometimes I have to turn the surround sound off. So I can hear the dialogue coming out of the center speaker. Yeah, it's nice to hear the explosions behind me, but if I can't hear why something exploded.
You're exactly right.
But it is the devices in that they're not using it properly.
Yeah. That's exactly right. That is my point.
Yeah, mixing it right.
If you know, my yep, wife recently exactly. got into the old Perry Masons.
Oh, yeah.
You can hear.
Yes, Stella.
Part of it. And Stella, Adela Street.
Yeah.
And Hamilton Burger.
Yes.
Yeah. And Drake. Whatever his first name was.
Yeah.
The thing is, and part of it is that people spoke better then, but you can hear all the dialogue. Every single mm-hmm. character is crystal clear
yep.
all the time. Now, she also is a huge Downton Abbey fan, and every one of those characters is crystal clear, but every accent is so friggin' different, I have to watch it with the subtitles on. You know, as for most modern stuff, people are mumble mouthed to begin with.
Marble mouth.
And I blame Marlon Brando. On top of that, the audio mixing, gives preference to background sounds. Background sounds are often so loud
yep.
and so much clearer than the dialogue that you don't know what people said.
It's lost in the sound.
Yeah. And quite honestly, I hate it. And it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, it's clear that, you know, when you watch Perry Mason, you hear all the music, you hear all the dialogue, you hear all the people walking and putting stuff down, and you don't lose any of that. But that's because the mixers, the audio mixers, the people who were doing the mixing, had a different set of priorities than they do today. I don't know what today's priorities are. Obviously, the explosions. Much more important than the people talking. I mean, if you're watching John Wick, then yes, the explosions are the important part. And the gunshots. I absolutely get that. But if you're watching dang near anything else, yeah, you might want to hear the dialogue.
So you have a clue what's going on.
Exactly. So... yeah. It's just different. Now we have to have AI fixing the problem rather than telling somebody slapping around
teaching
the audio mixers.
Somebody to correctly use it.
Exactly.
Everybody's throwing the word AI into their product because that's the hot new thing.
It's the new hotness, yeah.
Just someone the other day I was talking to, they're trying a new mail client because it has AI built in. So you can show a message thread and click summarize, and the AI will read all the messages and summarize it for you. Didn't you write that message?
Yeah, exactly.
And then you can say reply, and the AI will generate a reply for you. Isn't that what you would have done yourself? Oh, okay.
Right.
Sure. AI, fun.
Fun. I do like AI when I have very limited amount of time, like in the morning, and I want to know what this article says. I can say to ChatGPT or Bard, summarize this article. And it gives me, you know, a couple of paragraphs to say this is what this article is about. Great. Great. But I don't want to relegate my correspondence to AI. Because mm-hmm. how do I know what it's going to say? I'm going to have to read it and edit it anyway, so why don't I just write it to begin with?
And Microsoft has started including AI into its Bing search results.
Right.
Which you can kind of see You can see now when you do a search, you get your regular search results, but then if you scroll up a little bit, you can see the AI stuff about what you're searching for.
Right. And a lot of people are moving to Bing because they prefer, they think they prefer the AI enhancement of what Bing is doing. But Google's doing it with Bard as well. And we'll see. You know, one of the problems they all have, and they've admitted it, is a lot of what they gave to it is things like Reddit and Discord, which may not be really the thing you want.
Especially things like ChatGPT, which are, what's the word I want? Affirmative and assured that what they're typing is right and it's wrong.
Right.
They're confidently wrong.
Exactly.
And you may not know that.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. What's up, Tom?
Yeah, hi. Sorry for calling at the end of the program with a rather pedestrian question here, but
no.
Here it is. So, you know, on an iPhone, if you're in your mail application or to write a text message, there are ways to cursor down on the text. Using you can swipe along the keyboard to move the cursor to the right place on the text if you want to edit it or insert new text, right? But suppose you just want to put in on the keyboard that's shown a left or right, you know, arrow to simply cursor, just as you would on a regular keyboard, to the spot in the text that you want to edit. Is there a way to do that?
There are ways to add third-party keyboards. I don't know offhand of one that has cursor keys. Generally, you can tap where you want to put the cursor. You tap and hold, and then drag it around.
Right.
But I'm looking to see if I can find an iPhone keyboard with cursor keys. It would probably be in the App Store if there was one.
Okay.
Yeah. Everybody assumes that you've got tiny little fingers and incredibly good eyes.
Well, I've got cursor keys on my external keyboard, and they work the way an external key should work.
Yeah. That would be a great addition or modification to make to the iOS operating system, if they could get that in there.
Yeah, it would. But I agree with you. I don't know of one that does that. I know that I do not believe that my keyboard on Android does that either.
I'm seeing a bunch of keyboard options. I'm scrolling through. I just went to the App Store and typed a search for cursor key. Hey, I found an AI cursor, an AI text keyboard.
Nice. You mean something that does predictive text just like every other keyboard does?
Yeah. It's something that might be there if you just might have to dig for it.
So maybe I can get an AI app to do the editing for me. I can just let it take over my whole life there and write letters for me.
Right.
Okay, guys. Appreciate the help on that.
All right. Thanks. Sorry, Tom.
Right. Sure.
Bye-bye.
Ooh, that looks like a cursor key.
What does?
Left and right of the space bar.
No, those are the less than and greater than.
Less than and greater signs. Yeah, so instead of hitting the symbol button, you can get to them.
Okay, hold on.
Right. So, yeah, there's just not, I don't know of one that does cursor keys. Again, because you've got a touch screen, they assume you don't need cursor keys.
Touch and hold.
Right.
There's beginning of a line, end of line.
Right, most of them won't do that. All right.
So calling all you developers, somebody write a keyboard that has cursor keys.
Right. I've forgotten how to spell Henrietta. Well, our next caller is Skip from West Henrietta, New York.
Hello.
Hi, Skip.
There.
How are you?
Okay. I am hoping to make a little nature sound effects machine, inexpensively, dedicated just for that. I found a program called Atmosphere Light, L-I-T-E, and it's been around for years. Now there's now three versions, the free version, medium version, and a deluxe version that does hundreds and hundreds of sounds. You can change the volume on anything, the timing on anything, and all that neat stuff. And, you know, years ago they weren't never going to support Windows. But now I can get the latest version on Windows. And I was hoping to dump it on a little Raspberry Pi. Just a, you know, speakers, a Raspberry Pi, and nothing but maybe that's it. And I just, they kind of claimed years ago that it would never fit on a Raspberry Pi. Well, I'm sure the Raspberry Pis have gotten bigger, but so is the program.
Well, what OS is the program written for?
I don't know the original, but it does. It runs on my home computer, my big computer, under Windows 11.
So you can't easily put Windows on a Raspberry Pi. It's Linux based.
Okay.
There is an Intel based Raspberry Pi kind of thing, and I'm looking for the name of it now. That uses an Intel chip and can run Windows.
ARM 64.
Well, yeah, it's an ARM chip, but it can run Windows.
Yeah, some Raspberry Pi models can as well, but there's a program. It's not impossible to do this with Python on a Raspberry Pi. Actually, that should be fairly easy to do. With Python, or assuming you know Python. But as far as a program that, like, all you have to do is plug in the name and the file name, I don't offhand know of one.
I should double check if they have it in other versions also.
For other operating systems, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. You know, you can make, you're really essentially looking for a sound effects machine sort of thing.
Yeah, most of the ones I've seen are much simpler, you know, half a dozen sounds total.
Right, right, right.
I mean, this one you can actually program them, you know, what comes up, what comes down, how long it lasts, how, you know, everything like that. But part of my biggest question is, will it fit in a Raspberry Pi? I don't know how to tell that.
Well, it depends on two things.
Yeah, and what do you mean by fit?
Yeah,
there's the processor, the OS, and the storage and the RAM, and the program should say what it needs for OS, right. Storage and RAM.
Right. It's going to be two things. It's really the amount of RAM you have, and the amount of storage space you have, because those sound effects files are going to take up space.
Yeah.
So if you have a Raspberry Pi with only 16 gig, you might fit everything you want. But if you have one with 32 gig or a 64 gig chip or 128 gig chip, you're going to be fine.
Or SSD hard drive.
Or an SSD hard drive. So you should be able to, you know, if you could probably look up how to make a sound box or how to make a sound effects board with Raspberry Pi. Some of them are going to be
there it is.
Hardware.
The Zima board is an Intel-based Raspberry Pi kind of thing.
Oh, there you go.
You said Zima?
Zima, yeah, Z-I-M-A. I'll put a link to it.
I-M-A, okay. Okay, I can look that up and see what I can find. Maybe I'll call or contact the program company again. Okay, if you got time, I got one other little question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, years ago I set up a file with all kinds of names, addresses, phone numbers, and everything, years and years and years ago, and it's transferred up in version various out of WordPerfect into Windows, up the new old versions and all that. And the way I'm set up, all in the past, I've had at the top in the header, I've had the page numbers of the whole document, and then at the bottom in a footer, I've had the page numbers of each chapter or section. And the latest version I've got here of Windows 11, the top and bottom are connected, and you can't do them separately.
What program is this?
It's in Word now.
Okay, so this is a Word file.
Yeah, I mean, part of my problem, I used to have cross eyes, if you know what cross eyes is.
No.
It would give you all the little indications of all the commands, just like WordPerfect used to do.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
In Word, but that program died a couple of versions of Windows ago.
Sure. So what it sounds like is you just need to recreate the headers and footers.
Yeah, but if I change a footer, it changes the header. If I change the header, it changes the footer.
That should not be.
There is a way to link them, so they are made the same, but that's not the default. I'm digging through the word help now on how to
Like I want to do a page one in a chapter.
Yeah,
so, and it changes the whole numbering for the whole machine.
Yeah, by default, headers and footers are not related.
Well, to me, they seem to be. At least partly.
Right. So you got to find that setting and turn it off, or delete the current header and footer and add them back again.
Yeah. Okay.
You can also set up different sections, so you have different headers and footers on different pages.
Well, I do have sections, but they still interact. You change one, it goes back and changes the other at the same time when it's. I don't know what to do.
What you want to do
is... I'm trying to find the name of it. It's not linked headers and footers.
How do I unlink headers and footers in Word?
Yeah, you found that?
Yeah. Basically, you select layout. Are you writing this down?
Yep.
Layout. Breaks, next page. Double-click the header or footer and click link to previous to turn it off and unlink the header or footer from the previous section.
That unlinks the footer from section 2 from the footer of section 1.
Okay.
Well, changing the footer shouldn't change the header.
Right.
Yeah, well, it's part of, I think what the main one I was having trouble was that, set the page number to 0 or to 1.
Well, there's a first page different command, so if you want the second page to be 1.
Well, no, not that. Just the page numbers of the whole document get linked to the page numbers of the section.
So, right.
Right, right, right. So you create new sections with a section break. Right.
So if you want chapter 2, page 1, chapter 3, page 1.
What it sounds like is whatever you were using before... The new version of Microsoft Word doesn't understand it and didn't handle it correctly.
Yeah. I mean, years ago, it was funny. I set that up in WordPerfect, and I could use it. It would see it in Word, even though you didn't have commands for it in Word.
Right.
It still worked just fine.
Yeah. Well, now Microsoft doesn't care.
Yeah.
So what you're going to have to do is entirely remove all the headers and footers from the... Do this on a backup of the document,
just
all right? Let's not screw around with the original document.
Yeah.
Remove all the headers and footers and recreate them where you want them. Add in your section breaks, et cetera, et cetera. But it's going to be a little work.
Well, of course, the other problem is all the instructions you can find, they tell you how to do things, set up things. None of the instructions tell you how to undo and fix things.
You have to... Absolutely remove all the headers and footers.
Yeah, well, finding them is the problem.
You go to Insert, Header and Footer.
Yeah.
On the top right side of the document, select Options, Remove Headers and Footers.
Okay. Remove the whole thing. Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking the individual little pieces.
No, you remove it all and start all over again.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the only way that's going to work.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck.
Okay. Goodbye.
Yep. No, I get it. It means a lot of work, and I fully understand that, believe me. But the reality is that there are, when Microsoft makes changes, makes upgrades, they maintain backward compatibility with old versions of Word up to a certain point, but they don't necessarily maintain backward compatibility with old versions of other programs.
Yeah.
Now, at one point, WordPerfect was the new hotness, and everybody bowed to them. Including Microsoft. WordPerfect is not the new hotness anymore, so Microsoft has stopped paying attention to WordPerfect, and any commands that worked in WordPerfect do not necessarily work in Word any longer. That's sad, because let's face it, WordPerfect was an amazing program. But everybody does word processing these days, and so... It's a whole different world now. And so if you've got a program that used to work, that was written in Microsoft, that was written in WordPerfect, that worked in Microsoft Word, it may not anymore. And there's just nothing you can do about that. But now take a copy of that document and make it work in Word, and then moving forward, it'll continue to work in Word. What you may find is that document works perfectly well in something like LibreOffice or OpenOffice.
Yeah, that might do the conversion better.
It might do the conversion better. And you may may be able to say, okay, I've put it in open office, now save it as a Word document, and that'll work. But there's no promises to that, because that's a lot of linkages. And there's always a weak link somewhere. All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in, but I specifically want to thank everybody who was kind and generous enough to become a member of the station, to make a pledge, to donate to keeping this station and this show on the air. It's people like you that we do this job for. So thank you all very, very much. But we are done for this week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank everybody who called in. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll see you next week on Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Be good to one another, will you?